final arguments in the Loyola case, some differences over vaccinations and parents' rights, redefining gender in British Columbia, and a look at some issues in the Quebec provincial election campaign.
And now, Lighthouse News. Lighthouse News is a presentation of ARPA, the Association for Reform Political Action. Here's your host, Al Sebring.
Final arguments have now been made in the so-called Loyola case. That's the case of that Quebec Catholic school that's gone to the Supreme Court of Canada to find out whether or not the province's ethics and religious culture course can be taught from an expressly Catholic perspective. ARPA filed a factum in the case on behalf of a coalition of more than 300 Christian schools from across the country. The factum, basically a written argument, outlines the notion that this case goes to the fundamentals of freedom of religion. It was submitted to the Supreme Court a few weeks ago. As it turned out, there was no call for ARPA to argue its case orally, but there were oral arguments before the court, and we've got a link to the video of the hearing up at our website. Some differences are surfacing in the broader Reformed church community over how big a role the government has in compelling parents to have their children vaccinated for various diseases. With an outbreak of measles in the Fraser Valley just east of Vancouver, the issue has been getting quite a bit of media attention. The Vancouver Sun had an article earlier this month which compared the viewpoints of Reverend Adrian Guza, the minister of the Reformed Congregation of North America in Chilliwack, who's against vaccinations, with that of Reverend Abel Paul, minister of the Canadian Reformed Church in Chilliwack, who's more pro-vaccine. The article highlighted the theological differences underlying the various positions on this. Everybody agrees there is a fundamental principle at stake, and that involves parental responsibility and authority. But not everyone agrees how far that actually goes. ARPA lawyer Andre Schutten, like most people, has an opinion on this. He says parental authority is paramount. And he suggests there are four strict criteria that should be met before there's any thought of having the government override that authority.
Where we have a disease that is, first of all, very highly contagious or highly communicable, where it spreads very easily, and where that disease is a deadly disease, not just something that typically makes people sick or not feel well, but actually has a lethal effect, and where the vaccine, the cure for that, has a proven track record of being effective and to not have massive negative consequences. And the fourth criteria, where that vaccine has been developed in an ethical manner, so not using embryonic stem cells, for example, then I think in those very, very limited roles, then the state has a role in vaccinating its citizenry, but again, in exceptional circumstances. One example where this has been used is with a smallpox virus, thanks to government programs and so on. The smallpox disease has actually been eliminated. So there is a role there for the state, but very exceptional circumstances.
The entire issue has prompted quite a discussion on ARPA's Facebook page. You can check that out at facebook.com/ARPA Canada. We've also got a link up at the website to another interesting article on this by a young man named Ryan Smith, who blogs as One Christian Dad. One other note of this story, the chair of the Vancouver School Board has used this as an opportunity to mount a not-so-veiled attack on the Christian school movement. Patty Backus put out a tweet on social media last week asking whether religious private schools that are against vaccines should be eligible for public funding. With more than 100 confirmed cases of measles centered in the Fraser Valley, there have also been increasing calls on social media for some kind of rules to ban unvaccinated children from the public school system. Also from BC, the government's making it easier for people to redefine their gender. Up till now, if you wanted to change your gender on government paperwork like your birth certificate or driver's license, you had to undergo sex reassignment surgery first. Not anymore. Starting later this year, people will be able to designate their gender based on whether they feel they are male or female, rather than on what biology tells them. ARPA's Mark Penninga says there's a big problem with this because instead of being based in something objective like biology, it moves the whole gender reassignment piece into the very subjective notion of how people self-identify.
Public policy can't be built on how we feel about things. When we're discriminating because of race or sex, age or physical characteristic, these are all objective standards. They're things we can know for certain. But as soon as our laws try to cater to subjective standards, such as how we feel about our sexuality, the law loses meaning. If I feel that I'm actually a senior citizen, even though I'm 33, that doesn't mean that I get to claim senior rates when I shop at Value Village on Senior's Day. I don't qualify, regardless of how sore my back feels that day.
The BC policy will still require a doctor's note of some kind for people who want to change their gender identity. And activists say they want to remove that restriction as well, because, according to them, many doctors aren't adequately trained to deal with transgendered people. Quebec's provincial election campaign taking a nasty turn with respect to religious freedom. The leader of the Parti Québécois, Pauline Marois, has defended one of her candidates who's on record as comparing both circumcision and baptism to rape. Louise Bayot is running for the PQ in Montreal. She's a philosophy professor, and she made the comparison in an essay on religious neutrality that was published a few years ago. When she was questioned about it during the campaign, Mayot said she stood by her comments, although she did eventually apologize if she'd offended anybody. As for Premier Marois, she defended Mayot as, quote, an eloquent writer and a supporter of Quebec's so-called Charter of Religious Neutrality. One positive note with respect to the Quebec election campaign, the fact that they dropped the writ there means the government's bill to legalize euthanasia died on the order paper. And finally, a story from China, where the government has claimed it's going to relax its strict one-child policy. Evidence that this is not happening comes from a story in the Globe and Mail earlier this month. A hospital in Guangzhou has closed a so-called baby box because too many infants were being dropped off there. These boxes are for mothers who give birth but don't want to care for their infants. They can drop the babies off anonymously in a bassinet set into a hospital's exterior wall. There is a sensor of some kind in the box so that hospital staff know of the drop-off. The mother has a chance to get away and maintain her anonymity before the child is picked up. The Guangzhou facility opened in the last week of January, and since then it had received more than 260 abandoned babies. City officials there say the orphanage is full. They can't take any more, and that's why they're closing. Incidentally, there are three of these so-called baby boxes in operation in Canada, two in Edmonton and one in Vancouver, all operated by hospitals that have historic ties to the Catholic Church.
What can Canada's justice system learn from the laws that God gave to Old Testament Israel? As part of the God in Government Conference coming up in Ottawa in May, ARPA Canada is hosting an evening event for MPs and senators to look at the idea of restorative justice. Restorative justice looks at crime as an injury or wrong done to another person rather than just as an offense against the state. Its goal is to restore relationships rather than simply to determine guilt, and it's remarkably similar to the laws of restitution which God gave to Israel in the Bible. The speaker for this event is Dr. Yana Smith from the Canadian Reformed Seminary in Hamilton, and the evening is sponsored by MPs John McKay, Maurice Vellacott, and Lawrence Tote. Again, this is part of ARPA's upcoming God in Government event in Ottawa. For more information, contact your local ARPA chapter or email me, Nikki, at nikki@arpacanada.ca. That's N-I-K-I at arpacanada.ca.
And we're back for the interview portion of the program. With me on the line this morning is Saskatoon-Wanuskewin Member of Parliament Maurice Vellacott. He's on the line from his office in Saskatoon. Maurice is proposing a new bill called 560. It's a bill that has to do with what happens when people divorce. It's all about equal shared parenting. First of all, Maurice, welcome to the program.
It's good to be here, Al. I'm glad to be on your program.
A little bit of history on Bill 560, if you would. What is equal shared parenting? Where did this idea come from? And how big is the problem that this addresses?
Equal shared parenting, in contrast to the so-called notion of shared parenting, which might mean, Al, that I get 95% and you get 5%, would be more approximate to, but not necessarily 50-50, and because sometimes people right away think it's 50-50 in terms of the residential, but in a range from 35 to 50%, so basically increasing considerably the role of the parent who is being shut out. And this is, of course, aside from abuse or neglect. If it's abuse or neglect proven, then all bets are off, and it would not kind of resort that way. The other thing is it's a rebuttable presumption if there are some very other unique and mitigating kind of circumstances, and this is quite even aside from abuse and neglect, where a person can rebut this presumption of equal share parenting, then that parent or the one who's insisting on the greater share would have to prove that.
Some of the commentary I've seen on this says that some of the strongest opposition to this whole idea comes from divorce lawyers. Columnist Barbara Kay wrote last week that they are the greatest financial stakeholders in the adversarial system. What would this bill do to change that adversarial system?
In other countries where this has been in practice, or they have moved into this, it does remove lawyers out of this in a significant way. I mean, there's still a place for them in the more adversarial kind of situations, but it doesn't make the adversarial approach of our present family law system the norm for every situation. So mediation would be much more the situation. In fact, in a lot of cases, parents knowing that no one has the upper hand, so to speak, going into the situation, it's preemptive, it's preventive in terms of the further erosion and breakdown of the marriage. And they often come to terms early on, just thinking through what works best for their respective schedules.
Is it necessarily a good thing, though, to make this process cheaper? I mean, fundamentally, that's one of the things we're talking about. If I want to play devil's advocate for a minute, divorce is an unfortunate reality in our society, and I know that social conservatives generally decried the notion of no-fault divorce when that came in. But if we minimize one of the biggest financial components in divorce cases, the whole question of custody, and create this presumption of equal shared parenting, are we making it easier to get a divorce? You know, we know of guys and couples who said, you know, we're going to stay together for the sake of the kids because we can't afford to go through this whole divorce thing. Talk to me about the notion that this bill might make it easier for couples to go their separate ways. Is that necessarily a good thing?
Well, no, and this wouldn't do that, because the fact is they've actually done some studies to prove, where this has already been implemented in some measure, that it's actually had a preemptive and preventative effect. Studies that actually pointed out it actually steered parents away from that, because when they realize that the mom, let's say, because most often it's the mother that gets the full custody kind of thing because of the so-called tender years doctrine if the kids are young, but if no one of those parents feels they're going to have the upper hand walking into it, and particularly if the woman felt she had no upper hand on this thing, then she and he would work a little harder on those marriage issues and resolve them for their own good, but then also for the benefit of the children.
You mentioned the so-called tender years doctrine, the notion that, you know, we're dealing with very young children. Tasha Carradine wrote a piece in the National Post last week against your bill, saying that those under five need the nurture of a mother more than they need the presence of a father. Are you proposing a 50-50 custody split even at that age?
Tasha asked a good question. I had another lawyer actually put this question to me. I don't mind for an amendment to come forward that maybe would make that point. You know, if the child's breastfeeding and in the early years more spent with mom, if you will. But if that was set aside, that it didn't affect things later on, I'd have less a problem with an amendment like that. But being that possession is 9/10 of the law, and judges are very reluctant to upset the status quo and change it and disrupt the situation, in quotes, and then possession being 9/10 of the law, so they don't want to change that later when the kid is 5, 6, he needs a dad to wrestle around with, he needs the father influence, or he's going to have to call in Big Brothers, you know, there's a good organization, but why do we use Big Brothers or Big Sisters? Because they don't have the other gender involved in their life.
It's probably fair to say that we want to move away from the presumption that the mother is always and necessarily the best caregiver. That's kind of the presumption that everything's working under now, and it's usually at the expense of the right of the dad to have access. A lot of folks, I think, understand that motivation, but some people think that we're going too far by creating the opposite presumption of equal shared parenting. Is there maybe some alternative way to address the imbalance that pretty much everybody acknowledges does exist in the present system?
First off, I want to refer to your comment about rights. This bill is not put together from the point of view of rights so much as the best interest of the child. It's actually giving definition to what is the best interest of the child, you know, based on social science and research. So can we resolve this in other ways with soft guidelines and so on? Well, potentially, but I mean, maybe knowing human nature, knowing how we've already got some of those things introduced to the legal system, and it's not had the effect that's been desired or was thought. So there's already the so-called, people say the best interest, which is putty in the hands of the law profession and the family courts here. We already have this issue of maximal contact. you know, we already have issues of, you know, shared custody. Those are already in place.
Okay, we're running out of time here. Second reading debate starts this week. It'll wrap up the end of next month. Are you optimistic at the end of the day that this will pass in some form?
I am quite optimistic because my read is that it will be voted through and get support to committee, and then there may be some, you know, reasonable amendments postured to that point. So quite optimistic. It's the issue of time now, though, as well, Al, because it's got to go through a similar mirrored process in the Senate. And then it has to get Royal Senate after that. So all of this before the fall of 2015 election. If it moves along at a steady pace, it can be done prior to the next election.
Okay, sir. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Al. Have a great day.
You too. Bye-bye.
This has been Lighthouse News, shining the light of biblical truth on today's current events. Production Manager, Mark Penninga. Technical Director, Nate Bosher. Questions or feedback, email info@arpacandidate.ca. Be sure to join us again next month for another edition of Lighthouse News.